Not hypersexual, though. That's the word I don't want to say, but I feel like my brain
wants
me to
say it. I don't even know what that means.
Hypersexual?
Yeah.
It's like the first...
like someone that likes to hump trees and stuff like that? Like they just can't hold it in?
The last episode we're going to talk about is...
Bare hang on! I want to hump my desk!
Are you having sex with your desk?
I'm hypersexual!
I like this and you like that. It's just another review podcast. We pick a show, sit down and chat. Now listen to the start of our show, cause it's now.
Hello and welcome to Just Another Review Podcast, or JARP for short. I'm one of your two hosts, Russ.
And I'm the other half, Sean. We love to hear your feedback, so please leave a comment in Apple Podcasts, or you can email us directly at jarppodcast@gmail.com. That's jarppodcast@gmail.com. Russ?
This podcast is meant to be a companion for you post-episode. A conversation about what you just watched. And what did you just watch? Well, you watched Mighty Ducks Game Changers on Disney Plus. Episode 1.
Oh, yeah. And if you haven't seen the first episode, stop this right now, whatever you're doing, and fire up Disney Plus and watch it.
Throw your podcast listening device on the ground and just run to a TV.
That's right. Or if you don't want to listen to it, that's fine too. But there are spoilers ahead, so you have been rightfully warned. But alongside our review of The Mighty Ducks, we also will be pairing it with a movie from our childhood.
And surprise, surprise, we picked the 1992 film of the same name, The Mighty Ducks.
Yeah, come on, let's just get right into it. Hockey, hockey.
Hockey, hockey, hockey.
Okay, tell me about this new series.
Oh, well, thank you, Sean. It's called The Mighty Ducks Game Changers because this show's about to change the game. Who's in it? Lauren Graham from your favorite show, The Gilmore Girls.
The Gilmore Girls. I've seen every single episode of The Gilmore Girls.
Yeah, I can see it. I can see the box set on your bookcase behind you.
It is. I usually hide it, but for this episode, I whipped it out. There you go.
You stop whipping it out.
That's what she said.
It also stars Emilio Estevez, who is my favorite supporting cast member in the Mission Impossible franchise.
I feel his last name should be Sheen. He looks so much like his dad now that he's older, more so than Charlie Sheen, I feel.
Right. Charlie Sheen must look like his mom then. They have different moms, same dad.
They both look like their dad, but I really think Emilio Estevez looks like Martin Sheen, like a lot. And even has all these same mannerisms and talks like him and everything. So
he's his father's son.
Yes, definitely his father's son.
So you've hit on it. Emilio Estevez is from Hollywood royalty. We've already talked about one of his films, The Young Guns, in our podcast. What did we match it with? Was it Liberator?
The Liberators, right. Your favorite one that you had to go back and rewatch again, right?
And I've got lots to talk about, Sean.
I'm sure
later
you
in the episode.
I'm sure you do.
Emilio Estevez. Also was in The Outsiders. Have you ever heard of that film?
I have. I've heard of it. I've watched it. And I also acted in a stage play rendition of it in high school.
Oh my gosh. You would make a great Johnny Cake.
I would. I'm really good at dying. Oh, I'm burnt and death.
Sean is correct. So when Sean and I were in high school, we were in the play The Outsiders. Sean played Johnny Cake, which is best friends to Pony Boy. But
Pony
Johnny,
Boy.
you died. You there was a house fire or something where you guys were living.
I like saved some kids from a burning house fire and then got all burnt and then died dramatically. Stay cold, Pony Boy.
Okay, let me give you a second. Okay.
Beep, 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 beep. I think I need more morphine. Beep. But until then,
beep.
Oh shit, this hurts too bad.
Beep.
Beep. Pony Boy.
Beep.
Stay gold.
Beep.
Oh.
I played Soda Pop, and that's all I remember about that. I don't think were we friends? Was Soda Pop and Johnny Cake friends? Or was I? Because there's Greasers and the Socias, right?
I was a greaser too. Yeah. You were a greaser. Yeah, we were friends. We were part of the same tribe.
Yeah,
same gang.
I did
Speaking of gangs,
though.
The Mighty Ducks, gang of kids.
Yeah.
Let's get back to it.
So, and also, I guess I should say, because there's a bunch of kids in here, which I didn't write down their names, but they're all fun. But Coach T is played by Dylan Playfair, who you may know from Letterkenny fame, or The Descendants. I don't know which ones have you seen Letterkenny or Descendants? Which one is your go-to?
Unfortunately, I've seen The Descendants more than I've seen Letterkenny, but I knew that he was in Letterkenny. So yeah. I hang on 2 seconds.
Okay. Yeah. Dylan Playfair plays Riley, one of the hockey players. So if you've never seen Letterkenny, give it a shot. Don't go into Letterkenny all at once though, because it can get a little tedious. But it is a good watch. I do recommend checking out Letterkenny.
I tried the first episode of Letterkenny, and I think I kind of failed. I'll give it another go, though. I should, because it's all about hockey.
Yeah, it kind of gets away from hockey, because there's the three groups, right? There's, like, the jocks, Hicks, yeah. But there's just some running gags, and sometimes it's good, and sometimes it's not so good. But overall, there's some pretty funny bits in there.
Nice.
The Mighty Ducks Game Changers, who directed it, produced it, wrote it. It was developed and executive produced by Stephen Brill, who was involved in the first three films as well.
Oh, I know Stephen.
Oh, you're a good friend of Stephen.
No.
Okay. He's also a director of all of Adam Sandler's bad films. So any film... Name one of Adam Sandler's bad films.
Little Nicky.
Yeah. Yeah. Stephen Brill was the director of that. Anything else?
Bad Adam Sandler movie. I mean, I don't know, that Pixels wasn't the greatest, was it?
I don't know. I didn't actually say it. I've heard actually okay things about it, but no, he wasn't involved in Pixels. He did. Oh. I think he did Mr. Deeds.
Oh, I never saw that one, so that's probably why I didn't say it.
Yeah, he did Mr. Deeds, and then there was a few other ones. I think The Do-Over, which was a recent Netflix one, and Hubie Halloween, which was kind of silly.
No, I haven't seen any of those.
Yeah, okay, anyway, so that's who Stephen Brill is. And
some recognizable geography in the show.
Well, that's
Russ.
What I was going to say. It was filmed in Vancouver, British Columbia, where both Sean and I reside. It was filmed very close. I think they built the arena, like where Emilio Estevez works. They built that from scratch in like a studio lot.
The Ice Palace is not a real place.
Not a real place. But a lot of the other venues, like the larger venues with the large spectators, were all like local arenas near our place.
Yeah, every time they cut to the wide shot, they've got the same wide shot that they cut to at the Ice Palace. And I think it's some sort of structure with like a superimposed front sign on it or whatever. It looks pretty visually affected up whenever they cut to that wide shot of the Ice Palace. So
yeah.
I can, but then the inside must be real because it's got a real rink, right?
Yeah, no, and but I think that was built for Disney
Plus. Oh, really?
Plus, like,
pretty
for the
hard
show.
To
like,
build a rink for a show.
Hey, man.
Hey,
in Canada, people
build
rinks
in
the backyard. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Disney's got some money. Disney's got deep pockets.
A bit.
And that's how we heard about this through the Disney Plus app, just telling us that... here it was coming. The franchise is growing. It's three films, cartoons, and now the TV show. Were you excited to watch this, Mr. Sean?
Yeah, you know what? I sat my family down and we watched it as a group. So I was excited to watch this.
So you watched, because you, when at the last time we had talked about this in our last episode, you had admitted that you had just watched the movie, the original movie recently with your family.
Right.
And then now you've watched the show with your family again.
Right.
Yes. There you go.
Yes.
Yeah. I agree. I did the same. We watched the movie first, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. And then we watched the show. And overall, I think the girls liked it.
Yeah.
M- My next game changer, here's my Wikipedia synopsis. Now a powerhouse in its division, the Mighty Ducks junior hockey team is selective about who makes the cut. It's no longer about fun. They're the bad guys. After being kicked out and being told he is wasting his time, a 12-year-old boy named Evan, at the urging of his mother, forms a new hockey team of underdogs with the help of the Ducks' original coach, Gordon Bombay, who has since become a despondent owner of a low-level ice rink. That's my synopsis.
Down and out.
Down and out.
Grumpy old man.
Well, that's interesting because so you watch the movie, and we can't separate this. We have to talk about the movie and the show all at once. It's just the way this is going to have to go. They're connected. They're connected more so than any film and show pairing that we've ever done
in history.
You watch the film, and he starts the movie by saying, you know, he hates hockey, and he hates hockey because of his experience as a child and his bad experience with the coach. So he hates hockey, but he has to do community service. And that's how it all ends up. But then he gets his love back for hockey in the game. But now, three movies later, he hates hockey again.
No hockey signs up in the ice palace.
Yeah, he tells them he says he hates kids and he hates hockey. So it's exactly the same, although a lot older. It's the exactly the same Gordon Bombay that we saw in the original Mighty Ducks.
Right, he's come full circle back to where he started at the beginning of the original Mighty Ducks movie.
Did you see 2 and 3? Have you ever seen 2 and 3 Mighty Ducks?
No, I haven't. No.
Nearby. No. So I was wondering if there was maybe an arc within those movies. I'm going to assume there was not. I'm assuming that once he learned to love kids and hockey in the first movie, he kind of continued that thread, but I could be wrong. But yeah, now he's back at it. He hates hockey again. And I don't know if we ever truly learn why in the first episode of this.
Not in the first episode. No.
Unless it's in the movies that we haven't seen, but we don't know that. So, we meet. We kind of see, they're at the stadium, the Mighty Ducks stadium. They're very professional. Kid gets cut. Mom has a freak out. You can tell by all this, like, mom guilt, single mom pressure. I feel like Lauren Graham, that's her name, right? Lauren Graham. Yeah. I feel like this is probably the exact kind of same character that she probably played in Gilmore Girls. Like, she's probably very good at this kind of...
Yeah, that's funny you were going to say that, because I was going to mention, I feel like this Lauren Graham doesn't have much depth as far as characters. Like, she's just the same. She's Lauren Graham. It's like Billy Crystal. You know what I mean? And you get what you get. If you kind of want that really sort of sarcastic... seems like she laughs everything off. I don't know. Kind of character. You hire Lauren Graham. Yeah. And she's the same in Bad Santa, same in Gilmore Girls, I imagine. And the same here, you know,
assumptions, but she's obviously very good at what she does,
I've seen enough of her to know that it's the same shtick every time I watch
Santa.
Oh yeah,
Bad Santa is good. You've seen enough.
Fuck me, Santa.
Is that so? Sean just swore.
I swore. I said the F word actually a long time ago.
Oh, did you already?
I did, kind of by accident. Yeah.
It was the fuck me Santa that really.
That one really was on purpose.
My attention.
And that's three swears now. Two for me, one for you. So drop that here. Put it in.
Yeah. Every time one of us swears, we have to put the coin in the jar.
Yeah. We fill this imaginary jar full of coins.
And then one day when the podcast is over, we're just going to share it.
We're going to share it amongst
all our fans.
Yeah, maybe we'll have an actual diehard fan who can actually go back and count the swears, and we will donate that money to something.
Okay, you want to say that?
Yeah, if a fan wants to go back and actually count the amount of swears that we've done, I'll donate... that amount of money in quarters. Each swear is worth a quarter.
I don't know if that's worth anyone's time, but it could be.
Probably not. Unless
we go for a long, long time.
Yeah.
It could
if we get to episode 100 and I'm swearing.
That could be hundreds of dollars.
Probably a couple bucks of swears in each episode. You know what I mean? Like we might be having to put $500 towards something.
Well, not me. You will.
Right.
I never promised anything.
Right. I did. Hey, if we get to 100 episodes some fan out, here's the stipulations.
Okay.
100 episodes.
It has to be 100 episodes.
Fan has to count them.
A fan, and that's how we define the word fan is, you know, completely whatever.
Somebody
up for grabs.
Other than me or you has to count them.
Right.
And it's 25 cents a swear.
25 cents a swear.
And okay. Then where? What about where we donate it to?
It's, I think for the person who counts, it's their
person
choice.
Who counts gets to choose.
Yes, they get to choose.
There you go. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's okay. Good.
Yeah. Yeah, and we're on episode 11 right now, so we'll discuss this in a couple years from now. So
yeah, exactly.
Hopefully,
yeah.
Anyways, that means we're still doing this and still having fun, right?
Yeah, and COVID is still raging.
We just get to do this
in
person
get to one
do
day.
This, yeah, in the same room for once.
Yeah, well, that's exciting.
That is exciting.
You'll actually have me over to your house.
Yeah, yeah, and we'll set up a little
studio,
Joe Rogan kind of thing going on, you know,
shit.
You know, side by side. So we can actually lock eyes when we talk about stuff, and
wow.
You know, we'll get
eyes now.
We'll get really passionate and serious about things, and you know, you can reach over and slap me.
Oh yeah, is that what happens in the Joe Rogan podcast? People slap Joe Rogan?
I don't think so.
Ah,
no,
okay.
I think he tries to invite people that he generally gets along with, and even if he disagrees with them, I don't think it ever resorts to fisticuffs on the Joe Rogan show.
Well, hopefully. Well, maybe that's what we can do. Maybe that's our in. Maybe that's what a lot of slapping. So we meet a whole cast of characters, a lot of kids. I enjoyed all the kids. I thought they did a great job.
Yeah, they're funny.
Yeah, yeah. I thought the humor landed more or less. Like it. You kind of go in watching something like this a little hesitant that you're just not going to connect to it. But I thought overall it was good. Some more Canada references. There's a guy who has a moving, who's coming from Canada, which we assume looks the part of a hockey player, but has no skills whatsoever.
Yeah, that's pretty funny.
And the moving company, I think we're the A Movers. Hey, I'm from Canada.
Hey.
I found
the humor better in this than the movie,
original
movie.
Yeah, I think so.
And I think this show would probably resonate better with kids these days than maybe the movie would.
The thing with the movie, and we'll just get into it, is that
we might as well just mix them together.
Yeah, might as well mix it. You can just play like the temperature or the media rewind anywhere you want. Just play the sound like right now. Do it.
I'll be back.
Oh wow, that was good.
There you go.
My kids couldn't get into the movie right away because I feel like the vibe of the movie, you don't really get that it's a kids movie. Like,
I was going to say that too. It doesn't have the biggest
drinking
kids
and driving.
Well, and just the humor is not really geared towards kids. And then it makes adults laugh every now and then. Like, I don't really know where their target market for that original movie was for. I mean, it was for supposed to be a family movie.
Yeah, family, I guess, trying to hit all markets, but...
Yeah, but, I didn't find the humor would probably hit the mark with the younger crowd.
No, it wasn't until the very end of the movie where I could tell that my kids were getting a little bit more excited about it because they wanted to see them win.
The hockey stuff.
But it took a while to get and my neighbor, shout out to Rich. He also watched it with his kids.
Rich.
And, Rich. And I think he could, like, his kids were like, no, I'm not interested. Cause there's just like a whole, like for the, you know, I can't even, maybe 15, 20 minutes, the first 15, 20 minutes of the movie, it's just kind of him working at his attorney job and going to jail and all that, going to court and stuff.
That's what I thought when watching it. I was like, this is a tough sell for kids these days. And I don't know how it did so well back in the day as a kids movie. Just a really slow start and just not much kid humor, you know, to interest them, you know.
I'm sure it's aged a little bit, but and maybe it was, you know, it kind of started the trend too with these type of sport family movies. I mean, it kind of, you know, as soon as there's the kids running around with a purse full of dog poop, like, I think the kids started perking up a little bit. But, it's cool to see Emilio Estevez again. He
wasn't in much of the episode, was he?
No. And that's good. Again, it's like changing the game, right? It's not going to be an exact replicate of what we were used to with the Mighty Ducks. So he's more kind of sitting back. You know, the more of a supporting character for now. I assume that, you know, things are going to change.
Letting Lauren Graham kind of take over as a more a coach role. You know, he's a supporting coach role.
And I wonder if it will be less about winning and more about, you know, connection and friendship. And yeah, I just want, it just kind of go down to its normal like sport trajectory as far as like underdogs becoming the champions. I'm interested to see if that's where it goes or if they take a different approach with it.
Have you just watched the first episode thus far?
I've only watched the first episode. I know we're a little bit behind in our schedule, so we definitely had an extra 2 weeks to potentially watch more. But no, I did not watch any more.
Okay, we've been watching it every week, so I'm in the episode. We've done four episodes.
Episodes already.
Well, we can't make the girls wait, right? Okay. It comes out every week. It's Saturday night. It's Friday night is kids' movie night. They watch their thing, and me and my wife get to watch you know, our adult show. And right now we're watching The Falcon and Winter Soldier, which is it's okay. We'll talk about that in a bit. But yeah, on Saturdays until it's over is going to be Mighty Duck Night, which is pretty fun. It's kind of fun. So,
yeah, good.
What were we talking about?
I'm totally the show called Mighty Duck Game Changers.
Mighty Ducks. You were making predictions, and I asked because some of your predictions are bang on there. So,
oh, nice. Bang on. Applied directly to the forehead. I think Emilio Estevez is having fun. Just watching the first episode, like he seems like, you know, I think he could cash it in on a role like this. But it seems like I enjoyed watching him just kind of hang out in the back a little bit curmudgeon, but also like just like the slabs of cake, just always eating cake. I thought was a funny bit. You know, just kind of, you know, taking advantage of his role as this of cleaning up after the birthday parties at his arena and, you know, having a good time. So I enjoyed watching him. I also liked the Nick the Stick, the podcaster kid. I thought he had kind of like a cool Jonah Hill vibe to him, the way he delivered lines.
He's really funny. Yeah. He's, and he's got a lot of good little one-liners, and he always makes me chuckle throughout the show. So yeah, I quite like this little kid, the sports commentator kid. So
yeah,
I'm just looking up what's the last thing we might have seen Emilio Estevez in.
Thing.
Why are you interrupting me?
Oh, it's called. It's called co-hosting.
Yeah, it's like you talk a bit, I talk a bit.
Sorry.
I'm just kidding.
Okay, it's the Sean talking. Show. Okay,
No, really. Sean you had show. You had a deep thought. Go.
Well, I thought you were going to research, and I was going to talk about your research because I did look a little bit.
Oh no, I got it right here in front of me.
Yeah.
The Public is the last movie he was in 2018.
The Public actually has quite a lot of people in it when you look at it, but I've never heard of it. But pretty much for the last 10 years, he's hardly been in anything. Some voice work, maybe one or two films, but that's it compared to, like, you know, obviously the 80s, the 90s, even the odds.
He was part of the Rat Pack just about, wasn't he?
Yeah, 100%.
Kind of on the outside looking in. Breakfast Club. I mean, Breakfast shit. Club.
Classic.
Come on. One of the greatest movies of all time, I'd say.
But yeah, he hasn't taken a break until this last 10 years. And my thought would be it's all about Charlie, because Charlie left 2.5 Men in 2011 when he was winning. So my assumption, maybe he took a backseat. Maybe the whole family kind of just took a hiatus and concentrated on fixing his brother. What's wrong? What happened?
Nothing. I just did some research and look what I found.
What did you find?
Emilio Estevez's next project is Codename Guns 3, alias Billy the Kid. Plot kept under wraps. This is the third installment of the Young Guns film franchise, directed by Emilio Estevez, starring Emilio Estevez.
And it even has like a mock poster. Yeah. It has a, like, I saw that in the Internet Movie Database.
Yeah.
Ooh, and it has even a mock
Indians.
Poster.
Cowboys and Indians.
Can you tell by the poster who else may be in the film? Because they only list him as the one actor in it.
Because who kind of cartoony.
Is anyone still alive? Is Kiefer Sutherland still alive? Is Lou Diamond Phillips alive? Who is alive still? Anyone? No one's alive. Do they all die at the end of Young Guns 2?
Pretty much, yeah.
I think Lou Diamond Phillips did die at the end of Young Guns 2, didn't he? Or yeah. He's the maybe the one guy that got away? No, you're saying...
Well, it's... I guess it's left up to interpretation. He's lying in an alley bleeding out, and all of a sudden his spirit horse comes running towards him. So I'm pretty sure Chavez passed on to the spirit world. So, but man, Young Guns 3, that's probably gonna suck, but yeah. I'm excited.
Yeah,
kind of like something else I'm excited for, but we'll talk about that in the upcoming stuff.
Nice. So yeah,
overall, I mean, the show was sort of fun. You know, it's all about making hockey fun and the over competitiveness and seriousness, how that's brought to the game, you know, with these young kids and these desperate parents and, you know, all this, and how it's sort of ruining the fun of the game, and these kids, the don't bothers, are going to do things a different way, and they're just going to go and have fun. They don't care if they win or lose. And yeah, they're just going to play hockey for fun without being, I don't know, pounded on by a coach or parents that, you know, I don't know where I'm going at with that, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
You know, the pressure of the parents to do good, you know, Beartown, shit, man.
Beartown, oh, fuck, let's get into Beartown. No, I think, you're obviously into it. You guys have been watching it. I'm sure we probably will keep watching
it. It's cute. I'll call it that. You know what I mean?
And I heard some original cast members come back. I don't know who specifically. I'm hoping for Joshua Jackson, though I doubt.
I was just going to say, yeah, young Joshua Jackson in the first one there. Yeah, I guess
that's great to see him.
I heard he was hired because he could skate.
Right.
Being a Canadian kid.
Yeah. I mean, all these guys were. I think there were a couple of local young actors for this show as well, like hired from Vancouver, and they had to know how to skate as well.
Nice. How did the first episode end again? I'm four deep
They kind of had that introduction of all the teams. So they were in the arena.
Right.
And they were
your
divisional teams. And then they came in. Oh, don't forget about us. And they kind of come in trying to do a flying V, but more like a U. And then there's some sort, I can't remember where they're back, but Lauren Graham does some sort of like dance number on the ice or something like that. Which again was like cute and sweet and positive and just kind of feel good shit stuff.
Yeah. Lauren Graham just being a goof nugget.
Yeah. And that's what we need from our television.
Yeah. Let's rate it.
Okay.
This shit is awesome.
You suck.
What did you give, Sean? We can rate this out of 5 jarps. 1 is terrible. 2 is okay. 3 is good. 4 is well done. And 5 changed your life. How many jarps did you give?
Yeah, I was thinking about this. If 1 is terrible, what's 0?
Zero.
Can we even do zeros?
You can't even do zeros.
You have to at least give it a 1 because put the effort in to actually produce something.
Right. And you could zero. If you really thought 0 was appropriate, I mean.
I think whatever. Somebody's passion is at least worth 1 jarp, right?
Yeah. You could give it 0.5.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
Very terrible.
Anyways, this one, I'll give it a 3.5. It's nice. Cute. It's light. It's fun to watch with the family. I'll give it that. You know, I don't have too much to say about it. I like the message that it's trying to portray about just having fun. Don't take hockey and competitive sports too seriously. You know, not everyone's going to be an NHL star, so why don't you let these kids have a little bit more fun? And I like the fact that it's very culturally diverse and gender diverse as well. It seems to be just as many girls playing hockey in the show as there are boys, and I really like that. I really, really like that. So,
father of 2 daughters, you like that?
I do. I like the girl power.
Yeah, I like the. I gave it 3 jarps. I thought it was good. I enjoyed the twist of you know, just kind of turning the original movies on its head a little bit. You know, looking at as the Mighty Ducks is actually the villains of the show, or at least what they don't want to aspire to. Enjoy the Don't Bothers and all the cast of characters.
I don't like the name. Bothers. I mean, I don't know. They could have thought of something better than that. Kind of stupid. But
at least we know that an NHL team won't create a Don't Bothers team.
Yeah.
Unlike the Anaheim Ducks. Ducks. You're going to have to edit that out.
Yeah, I'm going to have to edit. The people will be like, why was there a coin there? Should I count that one? Yeah, the guy that's gone back, or girl, sorry. The person that's gone back to count the swears. Can we omit that last one? That was just a Freudian slip on Russ's behalf.
Sorry, I don't know. I don't know where I went there.
Like, you want to throw up?
Okay.
Temperature check. That's where we look back at the TV series that we watched and talked about in the past and see what we're thinking. Do we still love them, hate them? How do we feel? Sean, you had 30 coins.
Yeah, you gave us some context. You gave us some homework last episode and said that you feel that we should at least the shows that we gave up on after one episode, that we should at least go back and give them an honest shake. And if you can, finish it. And if you can't, that's okay, but at least you have to try.
Yeah, we're making this podcast, we're talking about them, we're spending time talking about it. Like, I think there's some joy that may come out of the fact of, like, really pushing through some of these.
Okay, there's no joy in my part here. I had to go back and watch 30 Coins, and man...
Episode 2, 30 Coins.
Still sucks.
No, nothing redeeming about it whatsoever.
No, man, it was like the same kind of thing, although there was no weird creatures or anything like that. This one was about a Ouija board. So it's about a couple kids. The story is the couple kids went to a cemetery and played Ouija. And while they were playing, you know, the candles blew out and blah, blah, blah. And a girl ends up disappearing.
Mm.
So they end up searching for this girl for a couple days. Nobody believes these other 4 kids that remain.
We should say spoilers for 30 Coins, by the way.
Yeah, I don't care. I'm gladly spoil it for anybody. But anyways, so, and then the girl, and then they play Ouija, the vet. The vet hooks up with these kids and they all play Ouija again. And then the candles burn out and the girl returns while they're playing. But she returns, she's very
distant. Like,
yeah, she's possessed big time. Yeah, almost. Yeah, yeah, possessed almost.
Yeah.
So she starts sort of communicating with the priest. She's being like the spirits are conjuring her or using her as a medium to talk to the priest. And they're basically
the boxer convict
priest. Yeah, the boxer convict, Fidel Castro wannabe. And they're basically threatening him to, like, for the coin or whatever. And they're using this girl. And she just, like, freely starts mutilating herself in front of him, like cutting off her finger and sacrificing herself and like giving it to him. And one point she takes a knife and goes right through her cheek and slices it open. And then she's still like talking to him, but you can like see right through her cheek and like see all her teeth and jawline and shit like that. And it's pretty graphic and pretty gross, like the first episode, but just stupid. I mean, I watched it, but I was cursing your name the whole time.
So is it more like a monster of the week kind of thing, or it's just
it revolves around, you know,
the 30 coins.
The coins, I guess, but there wasn't much of the mayor.
Do one more episode.
No.
Come on, you can do it.
Okay. I'll do one more, and every week you can hear me bitch about 30 coins, how much of a piece of shit is. Okay, you do yours first, until we start talking about the actual good shows.
Yeah, yeah. A spoiler alert for first season of Search Party on Crave and The Liberators on the Netflix. So I barreled through it, man. I got through both. Search Party, I thought was pretty good. So we discussed
Chantal.
Quite a bit. Chantal, we discussed quite a bit of when we reviewed the first episode that the supporting cast did a very good job in making us hate them. So they, yeah. None of them really had flattering roles. So which was interesting. So spoiler alert again is that at the end of season one, actually Dory becomes kind of the cruelest character in the series. Oh. So you actually, where like a lot of the supporting cast actually redeems themselves through different actions of their characters. So it's interesting. Yeah. So you go from thinking like, oh, poor Dory, she surrounded herself with a bunch of losers, to going, oh, Dory, you've made some terrible decisions along this path. And you kind of deserve what you get. Chantel was kind of again, like, just like the obnoxious name, like the whole, her whole where she landed and how she, you know, came back at the end of the season was pretty obnoxious, just like her character's name is. You know, she was just hiding out the whole time. Like, she wasn't captured, she was just kind of like trying to get away from it all. But it was perfect, like, because of the whole, you know, if anyone who, you know, is named Chantel, it kind of makes sense.
Go away.
She just needed some me time.
I have a cousin named Chantel, which is okay.
That's fine. No, that's fine.
But Chantal.
Chantal is so also a couple of some actors that are in the show, not every episode, but so Rosie Perez was in the show. Ron Livingston was in the show, and Parker Posey was in the show. So some really fun character actors. And love Ron Livingston from Office Space and Band of Brothers. And so he was there.
Rosie Perez was good in The Flight Attendant, I thought.
Yes, exactly.
I'm not a big Rosie Perez fan, maybe because of her annoying character in White Men Can't Jump. Right. But she was good in The Flight Attendant and very kind of like naive, hypertense kind of character. And yeah, she was good. She was good support in that show.
Yeah. So overall, I could see, you know, if Search Party continues its momentum, I can see where, you know, why it, you know, can maybe get some critical good reviews. Overall, I would it's definitely different.
Are you going to watch season two?
I know I probably will not. Okay, continue so it's not to that watch good. Season two. Not that.
You just good. Did it because you had to.
I did it because I had to, because I'm committed to the cause of JARP. Right. I'm JARPing.
You're JARP.
Spoiler for The Liberator on miniseries on the Netflix.
The faux pas animated series.
Yep. Right. So there's four episodes. We watched the first one because that's what we do here on JARP. I watched all four. The second and third episode are actually pretty cool. But the first and the last one are not. Again, it all comes down to like the whole, like, just like the first episode, the dialogue's pretty flat. It looked many times because they're using this rotoscoping technology, like it just kind of seems like they're just actors walking in front of green screens, even though it's kind of animated over top of it.
Lifeless populations.
Yes.
Or something. Yeah.
But the two middle episodes are all super action oriented. So very much feeling like Band of Brothers or, gosh, what was the Tom Hanks, Matt Damon one? Saving Private Ryan. Exactly. Thank you. So a lot of like just built on like strategic battle aspects of the war. Quite cool. And the technology actually kind of helped, I think, lean towards it and kind of just really hyper realistic. What do you think I'm going to say? I'm so hyper realistic. I want to say sensualization, but that's not a real word. Hyper, like just the senses, like it just kind of like,
okay.
Can we spend some more time on this? No.
I know what you're saying though. Yeah.
Not hypersexual though. That's the word I don't want to say, but I feel like my brain wants me to say it.
I don't even know what that means.
Hypersexual?
Yeah.
It's like the first...
like someone that likes to hump trees and stuff like that. Like they just can't hold it in.
Yeah. Like the middle two episodes of The Liberator. It's like hypersexual. the last episode we're going to talk about is...
Hang on. I want to hump my desk.
Are you having sex with your desk?
I'm hypersexual. I just fucked my microphone.
Oh man, put it away.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Beartown. Let's talk about Beartown. We both finished the series.
Amazing show. I'm going to go out and say it's my favorite show of 2021 thus far.
Wow. It is April. So there's still a lot of
time.
There is
lots of time. But yeah.
You liked it.
I really, really liked it. I think because it hit me really hard, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was interesting because I was, we're going to release our Beartown episode pretty quicker while we're recording this one. But I was listening to our recording just to make sure, quality check. And it's interesting because you talk about the idea of this main character, the protagonist girl, and you talk about how, you like the decisions her character is making. You like the confidence that she shows and you want to I would like to see my own daughters do that. But then, unfortunately, I can't remember if it's episode 2 or 3, she suffers a terrible fate. And so now because you kind of associate with the girls on that, now you're kind of going, oh, she's a really cool chick. And then you see something like that happen to her. And then you start thinking about, shit, that could happen. That can happen. Yeah. And it happens, right?
Yeah.
How did that follow with you? Like, how did that
it
sit with you?
I was very, very sensitive to it, to be honest with you. Yeah. I was bawling by the end of the last scene, and just, a lot of things, the loss of their child and how we came full circle with that at the end really, really touched me. And, yeah, I think it was the fact that what happened to her, and you start thinking about it, and you start thinking like, wow, that could easily, in this day and age, happen to one of my little girls, and it was just a really hard thought to stomach,
Yeah.
And this poor girl, and I just think about it. These poor victims, these girls, and everyone's like, well, why don't you come forward more often and more? And then you see the struggle that poor Maya girl went through actually coming forward, and the scrutiny and the just no one believing you and all that. So it's no wonder a lot of these girls are so hesitant to come forward. And then when they do, because they were hesitant, it doesn't really play so well for them. No. But it really shouldn't. That really shouldn't matter. You know what I mean? So I found that really hard. Just how the whole town ganged up on her when really she was just doing nothing but telling the truth.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And then that young man, the young Indian boy that came through at the end and did the right thing. I mean, I was just almost like standing up and applauding him. I'm like, thank you for being a decent human being,
But risking everything. Like, he was already, someone who just kind of attained this kind of social stature by like joining the team and already like, yeah.
A young Indian boy with a single Indian mom in a predominantly white Swedish town.
Dealing with racism and prejudice already.
Yeah. And now at the end, he's singled out as the rat and gets the shit beat out of him and hospitalized pretty much. But then that thug, that one thug guy that came to his rescue, he kind of did a 180 on his thought process. And that touched me too, because that guy was a real douche. And then he kind of, when the truth really came out, he realized, oh, shit. Yeah. I've got some making up to do or just, I don't know. Yeah.
The characters were very like three-dimensional. Like, I thought they did a really good job. And like, you can be an asshole here, but this is too far. Kevin and his dad, who, are the antagonists of the show. But you feel for them at times as well. Like, you empathize, though you don't, agree with what they do, but you understand.
No, and it's just the acting got better and better. Yeah. And a show's really good when, you can go on these long stretch periods without any dialogue. Like, it's literally like the physical acting of these people telling the story. And I remember it was probably like episode 3 or something, but there was this huge break where there was not much dialogue, maybe even in the episode itself, but yet it told so much of a story, really focused on the actors' faces and their reactions to certain things. I just thought it was excellent. Just when a TV show or a movie can do that, still tell the story visually, I think that's really, really strong, especially these days where everybody relies so hard on just on the nose exposition and you know, I'm just telling the audience everything, you know, through dialogue or script, you know, and it was just so nice to let actors breathe and tell a story here. Mind you, you know, even though the story was,
let your audience get into it. Let your audience be uncomfortable. That show did that. And I really liked the direction of this too. Like, I love the silent moments of like just watching the contrasting single figure skater in the mornings. Mm-hmm. Like that always like just because it was so intense with the hockey and just not only just the hockey itself, but just the characters around the hockey rink, whether it's the parents or the kids and what the kids were doing. But then you'd get these nice shots of just like a single figure skater.
And he was really good doing her thing for fun because she loves it, you know, and just free in her own world, right?
Yeah. Because this arena is full of so much hate and blood and tears, and then you just see like something like that, and you're like, it's just
The games were on and the parents heckling during the games. I mean, that's very Canadian and obviously very Swedish too.
Because, yeah, and the one mom that looked like maybe this was new. She's like, "Oh, my daughters are here," and the other mom's just like, "Well, you shouldn't have brought them to the hockey."
Oh yeah.
Whatever it was. Talking about Beartown, everybody should go watch it. Trying not to give too much away here, but
I was trying
good character
to
study, but
yeah.
All right. Well, I feel like we've already done Media Rewind, so into stargazing?
Sure. Yeah.
Stargazing, that's where we just look at some stuff that we're maybe watching outside the podcast for fun or stuff that we're excited about. It doesn't even have to be TV and film. It could be just what's exciting us right now.
You go first.
Not proper English. We were talking about Zendaya. Last couple episodes ago. When did we talk about Zendaya?
Madonna's offspring.
Yeah,
Cher's offspring. The one name wonder.
Why were we talking about her? Do you remember why?
Because we were talking about Euphoria.
Oh, yes, of course.
I'd watched Euphoria and I was talking about that.
Yeah, so that, and we both enjoyed season one of Euphoria. Mm-hmm. And we were thinking about, like, why does she have, and so I don't know much about her origins. And then the kids watch a lot of Disney Plus, and I'm walking by the TV one day and they are watching a show called Frenemies, which has like a young, maybe 11-year-old Zendaya in it.
Okay.
So she's a Disney actor, grown up in the Disney studios.
Okay.
You know, similar to all of our other fun Ryan Gosling's, the Justin Timberlakes of the world. So her
Oreo Grandes.
Oreo Grande.
That's what I call her. Oreo Grande.
Is that what you call her? Okay.
Yeah.
But so she pretty much was tagged with another actress named Bella Thorne, and they were in there we go. Yeah. They were in like movies, Disney movies, maybe TV Disney movies, but also like a show called Shake It Up, which ran for many series. And I thought, and so I'm watching this, I'm like, okay, oh, Zendaya, okay. She actually does have a long-standing history, and she's a great dancer, and she was actually in, like, Dancing with the Stars, I think, and so she's done all these great stuff. And then I can't remember what I was looking at, but then I'm like, oh, shoot, the girl that she's playing along is Bella Thorne, and there's really no reason I should know who Bella Thorne is.
Other
than the fact... I heard the news of her, like, the Fans Only Association. I don't know if you've heard about this.
She started an OnlyFans and said that she was going to show nudity and got
got $1 million, like, in one day.
She made
$2 million
in, like, a week or something. Right. I don't know. It was something stupid. She broke all these records. So many so that I guess OnlyFans decided to put a cap on right. how much you can donate to a person which or whatever like
hurt,
that.
Like the industry, I guess, is what yeah, I had heard. Like it hurt people that were actually relying on this site to yeah. make a career.
Who but anyways, couldn't because of she COVID. She said she was going to post a bunch of nudies and she right. never did. So she duped a bunch of lonely guys that decided to pitch in money.
And did you get your money back?
I did. I got a full refund. And yeah.
So I just thought that was kind of, I was like, oh, okay. So now I was able to tag, like, cause I heard that news story and now I was able to tag a name to the face, but the history of Disney actors. So Zendaya Marie Stormer Coleman.
Oh my Lord.
Is her whole name. So
no wonder she just goes by the one.
Exactly. And I from what the Google told me, she's always gone by Zendaya only. So that's ever since she was a child star. So pretty cool. Okay. Good to see all her success.
Where were you going with all this?
I don't know. I just was in because we had talked about Zendaya.
Okay.
And then I had kind of just assumed that because we were like, where did she come from?
Oh, right.
Why did she? Why is she?
You're giving
only one
us
name?
The Zendaya backstory, right?
I'm giving the Zendaya backstory to give some like in case people were still wondering and hadn't done their own research.
Right.
But I just thought it was funny because the kids are now into this. Shake It Up show on
Frenemies.
Disney. This Frenemies and Shake It Up. So I'm watching a lot of Zendaya and Bella Thorne on the corner of my eye as I do dishes.
Only fans.
Yeah, only fans. Fans only. I saw the first episode of The Nevers, which is on The Crave. And I didn't mind that. It has lots of promise. I'm never watched it, but Leah and I, my wife and I, are watching Always Sunny in Philadelphia. So we're probably
I've heard nothing but good things about that.
I never because we're looking for a show to watch, and I was skipping through, and I'm like, well, we could try this. You know, it was definitely done a while ago. It is it's quite a little on the edge, but yeah, quite funny. And not completely disrespectful. Tried to get the kids to watch The Mandalorian, and they're not into it at all. You're not into it either.
Well, I haven't given it the second shake yet, but yeah, we'll see.
They just said it was too boring.
What about The Falcon and Winter Soldier? You're watching that every week?
Yes. Yeah. So
what do you think about that so far?
I quite like it.
It's not bad.
It's playing with some big themes. And, I don't know how well it's mastering kind of going between, like, you know, those themes. And the fact that it's like an action buddy comedy, but also like really hitting on some dramatic pieces with trying to make a decision on if the Falcon should become the new Captain America. I think one of the lines in the most recent episode was that no self-respecting black man should pick up that shield. So they're dealing with some heavy topics.
And you wouldn't either, or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, it's...
But he's got this case. I think in that case is...
The Wakanda case?
Yeah, is a suit, some sort of suit.
So it's like a new, like, Falcon suit or a new, like, Captain America suit?
It's like a Captain America... It's like his suit, whether you want to call it the Falcon or Captain America. But it won't have wings, but it'll be like a super suit of some sort that'll help him wield the shield a little bit different.
Wield the shield.
Ooh, I like that. Wield the shield.
He was doing some training with the shield, though, in the last...
He was. Yep. I find Wyatt Russell, the interim Captain America, he looks horrible with a mask on. He looks like a doofus. And I wonder if that was
on purpose. I bet you anything.
I would think so, because I was like, didn't they test him out with a mask on? Because it doesn't, I'm sure, as good looking as some people are in real life as actors, but when you throw a superhero mask on, it might just not work for some people, you know? Russell, it doesn't really do him any favors, you know?
I think the whole point is for us to be like, that's not right. Like,
this guy's a doofus.
Yeah. Or just like, he should not be Captain America.
That doesn't sit well with me. Yeah.
Yes. I think right away you're supposed to say this doesn't sit well with me. And obviously throughout the series, he proves over and over again why he shouldn't be Captain America.
And right away when you're watching it, you're like, it just doesn't look right. Yeah. So which good is, job. Kudos to the production. Yeah, yeah, and Wyatt Russell for doing that role, right?
Yeah. Yeah, he's doing a good job for us hating him. No, it's interesting. Like, right, like you've got this at the end of Endgame. You've got, Captain America Steve Rogers giving the shield to Sam Wilson, the Falcon, who played the Falcon. Who is the Falcon, I guess? Not played the
Anthony
Falcon.
Anthony Mackie's the
Anthony
Falcon.
Anthony Mackie is the actual real guy. So this whole series is dissecting that choice. Which is kind of that one action that is all about what does that mean and taking us all on that journey, which, you know, that's pretty ambitious, but it's
and even said, he even Steve Rogers even said to him, you know, it suits you. Didn't he say that when they were sitting on the bench?
He says, how does it feel? And he says, it feels like it's not mine or feels like it belongs to someone. I don't know.
It was like it should belong to someone else.
And he's like, well, it doesn't. You know,
yeah, like it's this is yours.
This is your shield, and it is a new shield because I don't know how. Maybe the last episode will explain how he ended up getting that shield. That shield, you know, I think his shield, Steve Rogers' shield breaks when he's fighting Thanos. So, but then he goes back in time, and he has a new shield. So, where did that new shield come back? So maybe it was actually
does
designs.
It break when he.
So when he's fighting Thanos, that shield is destroyed. When at the end of Endgame, that shield he gives to Sam Wilson is a new shield.
One from back in time.
Yeah, where did it come? Yeah, that's the question. Maybe. Where did it come from? It's designed to live. There's little design differences. The question is like, where did the shield come from? Was it designed specifically for Sam Wilson? That's the show will deal with that. I'm not sure. Sorry, spoilers for the Falcon and the Winter Soldier. Talking about all episodes.
This whole show is spoilers.
Yeah, that's true. We should maybe just have a spoiler warning at the beginning. Every show spoiled. How are you liking it?
Yeah, it's not bad. It's got a bit of the Lethal Weapon vibe going on, you know, Riggs buddy and Murtaugh, buddy cop thing. I like that. I like that.
I thought even with this most recent episode, I think the whole the guys in the, like, fixing up the boat, I thought that was the best probably of that kind of buddy comedy kind of thing. Like, I thought they did a really good job in establishing their relationship and just kind of working
out
each other.
Yeah, it wasn't cheesy, you know? It was good. And it was subtle, right?
Yeah.
You know, with little pieces of dialogue and little moments, you know, but it wasn't like, let's all be best friends now. You're my friend. I'm your friend. Let's have a sleepover.
Let's be friends, Sam.
You're pushing it.
Okay. I like your sister.
Yeah. What else are you watching? Anything?
I think that's about it.
Well, me and Russ took a little break here. Life got a little busy or whatever, and we weren't able to reconvene for I think we took 3 weeks off here.
Four weeks.
Well, yeah, feels like a long time. So we'll get back into it. But in that time, I've had a bit of time to finish some things. So I finished Breaking Bad.
Nice.
Amazing. Now I can finally join in on the conversation. I didn't like what Walter White became at the end there. You know, I think I texted you a little bit about that or whatever. It was good. You know, you're rooting for him, and then season 5 comes and you're not really rooting for him too much anymore. You kind of flip over to Jesse and now you become Team Jesse kind of.
Because he became
everything he despised, pretty much.
Exactly.
He became this.
But he entered that world and it was there. It was all laid out for him. And from the episode 1 where he went to the dark side and the dark side corrupted
him. It was good. You think he died at the end?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's dead.
Yeah, there's no.
Yeah.
And then I watched El Camino, right? I haven't got into Better Gets, but I watched El Camino right away. They call it a Breaking Bad movie, but let's be honest, it's like the final episode of season 5, you know, it's just an hour and a half final episode of the show. Yeah. But I like it, how it went back and kind of explained Jesse's time in captivity. And then I watched a bunch of kind of documentaries sort of in the background while I'm like working out or whatever. The Defiant Ones, a story about Dr. Dre and Jimmy Iovine. He's like a music producer. It's really interesting, really cool. A lot more in-depth story of Dr. Dre than you got with the Straight Outta Compton movie. So a lot of those little stories that are in Straight Outta Compton, because it's a four-hour, four-part documentary, they were able to sort of flesh out some of them a lot more than the movie did. Obviously, being a two-hour runtime, you can't kind of get into details and everything. So a lot of extra details about what really happened with Dr. J and all that stuff. They're really interesting. If you I don't even think you need to like the music. I am a bit of a NWA fan, so I have a bit of obviously an interest in it, but just from a documentary standpoint and story standpoint, it's interesting.
Cool.
The last blockbuster, it's really.
Yeah, I started watching a little bit of it.
It's I mean, it was on in the background pretty much. Yeah. It's I mean, you get some cameos of some people just kind of being pretentious and shit. I don't know. It's whatever. And then I watched Seaspiracy, and that was really interesting.
Leah wanted us to watch it.
You should. It's really eye-opening. I mean, that's just the thing. You can watch these documentaries, and you want to believe the documentarians, right? And but if you do, it's pretty scary.
Well, that's the thing.
So
right?
It's like, very. Yeah. It's all about the fishing industry and the effects. And you'd be. I mean. I'm sure their data is very justified and backed up, but if their data is true, I mean, it's causing a lot of damage that we think other things are actually doing, but it's really the fishing industry that is depleting our oceans and plastic waste and just. Oh, just ridiculous.
So what can we do? What can we do right now
stop
to change?
Eating fish completely.
Stop eating fish.
Yeah.
Is it really? Altogether?
Altogether. Because there's nothing, unless you go and catch fish on your own, there seems to be nothing legitimate about the fishing industry. Even down to the tuna safe seals and marks of approval that you get on your cans of tuna don't mean shit. Doesn't mean anything. You're not saving any dolphins.
Right.
And it's just so corrupt and it's so, and it just goes so deep beyond like to everything for, like I said, from to the actual fishermen themselves, to where they can actual fish, to how they're doing it, to how wasteful they're being. And then again, how they're getting sort of, approved and their licenses and how they're getting it to market and shit like that. It's just, it's unreal. Fucking real.
Seaspiracy is that's Netflix, right?
Netflix. Yeah. Watch that one. That's your homework.
Yeah. Leah is really big in the documentaries. So, I gave in and we watched Big Little Farm.
Okay.
Which is also on Netflix, and I could be wrong with the title because I didn't write this down, but because we're talking about Netflix documentaries, and it is about it's this couple with their dog and they start a large farm. It looks like they got a lot of investments, so they got a lot of money to do this, but they basically it was a farm in California, but the soil was bad. It was completely devastated from its previous occupant, but they go in there and they revitalize everything. And they have this kind of guru that kind of walks them through what they should do. And basically it's just like the more species of plant and animal, the better, the more diverse you can make the whole area. And then as they start dealing with like the issues of farming, they realize that one species can support the other. And so like the solution to one problem is there, but it's not easily seen at first. So when they have this, like, for example, snail infestation, they later figure out that if they use the ducks to eat the snails and blah, blah, blah. So it's more like the more diversified,
but then they have a duck infestation. What do they do about that? What eats the ducks? Alligators?
They do.
Dogs?
I think they eat the ducks.
My dog would eat a duck if given the chance.
The dogs are eating something, or the coyotes. So I think there's, so it's just
But then there's a coyote infestation. Yeah, who eats the coyotes?
Exactly. It talks about that. It's a Big Little Farm, man. Coach,
I'm not too big on eating coyote meat.
Have you ever tried a deep fried coyote?
Mmm.
With salt and pepper?
Yum.
I recommend shaving the fur off.
Oh, that's what you're supposed to do. I've been picking it out of my teeth for days.
You got some coyote in your teeth? Yeah.
That's okay, about, the big farm, the big little farm?
The big little farm, something like that.
The big little farm, big people little farm.
I'll do Seaspiracy, and then we'll complain about the world later. All right, Sean, thanks very much, buddy.
Thanks,
I love you, man.
Yeah, no, I love you too. We won't take that long of a break again. We're all cut up, everybody. We're back on track.
Yeah, before we go, I'd like to say a couple things, though. Shit, asshole, fuck, bitch, jackass, shit. There
and he's just trying to get the money up so that come 100th episode, I'm a couple hundred dollars poor.
Yeah, you're shit out of luck.
Oh, again.
But you fucking helped somebody.
Okay, well, fuck this. We're out of here.
You're an awesome asshole.
Asshole.
I like this and you like that. It's just another review podcast. We pick a